In November of 2005, Joe Maddon became the manager of the Tampa Bay Devil Rays after spending 26 years in the Anaheim Angels organization as a bench coach, a minor league coach, and a scout. Now, when Maddon started with the Rays, one of the first things that he did was to outlaw or to get rid of the fine system for his team. You see, in Major League Baseball, it's long been a tradition that when a player fails to do their job by running out a ground ball or hustling on defense or appearing in the clubhouse when they're supposed to, that they would incur a fine from the coaching staff or from management. However, Maddon wanted to change the approach to discipline as he was building a new culture in Tampa Bay. And so he got a little bit creative. Rather than players having to pay a fine, he put a jar on his desk, and inside that jar were small slips of paper, and on each slip was written the name of a kind of wine. You see, what Maddon wanted to do was find a creative way to engage his players, to build connections in those moments when they weren't living up to the standards of their program. This was a form of accountability, but it was one that didn't just call someone to bear or call them out on the carpet when they made a mistake. It was a way for them to acknowledge the behavior was unacceptable, but to do so in a way that was fun and rebuilt a connection and allowed for conversation with the coach. Now, that tradition in Tampa eventually evolved. Maddon would take these bottles of wine and put them in the kitchen in the clubhouse, and after they'd win a series, 2 out of 3 games, or get a series sweep, they would bring out a huge chalice and he would empty a bottle of wine, and all the players that were interested in partaking would come with their own wine glasses and they would all share as Maddon educated his team on how to choose a great glass of wine. Now, this week on the podcast, we're not going to talk about drinking wine with your players, but instead we're going to talk about creative ways to discipline and bring accountability into your program that isn't just punitive, but it's fun, it's resourceful, and can rebuild the fractured relationships, the fractured trust that can often follow when a player makes a mistake.
Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast, brought to you by Thrive on Challenge. I'm JP Nurbin, joined by my friend and co-host Nate Sanderson. Each week in about 30 minutes, we discuss important principles and strategies of transformational leadership. At Thrive on Challenge, we help coaches to raise the standards and strengthen the relationships in their program because we know this type of culture produces better leaders, better people, and better results. To learn more about how we can help you, go to thriveonchallenge.com, where you can also subscribe to our weekly newsletter and get the coaching notes to every episode of this podcast.
Well, last week on the podcast, we talked a little bit about JP's outlandish claim that accountability is overrated. And if you haven't listened to that episode, we'd encourage you to go back because we talked a little bit about the importance of providing support for players as they're struggling to meet the standards of your culture in your program. But as we mentioned at the tail end of our episode last week, there are times where accountability and consequences are necessary. And so what we want to talk about this week on the podcast is how can we be perhaps a little bit more creative in assigning some of those consequences that, number one, are a bit more progressive in nature. In other words, it isn't just the nuclear option of not playing a kid in a game or kicking them off the team entirely. And secondly, we want to recognize that when a player's behavior is disruptive to your culture, it's also oftentimes disruptive to their relationships with their teammates and with their coaches. And so are there ways when we're assigning consequence to a behavior that we can do so in a restorative way to help repair and rebuild those relationships at the same time?
Yeah, and before we kind of get into those restorative consequences, obviously, I think it's important for people to have listened to the previous episode, but I think it also could be very helpful for people to check out episode 113. What we were really doing in that episode was really trying to outline a difference between what I would call transactional discipline and transformational discipline. You know, essentially approaching consequences in a way that is disciplining to not only get compliance in the behavior, them to, you know, meet the standard, but to continue to nurture the relationship and to continue to build character within the individual. And so that's how we kind of talk about transformational discipline. Now, before we kind of get into the restorative consequences, I just want to share a few stories of how powerful progressive consequences when they're done in a transformational way can be. For instance, about 5 years ago, I was coaching a high school team in Tennessee, and we had a young man in our team that had been playing in the program for some time. I'd actually been coaching him for about 4 years, but I had gone through a change in my own coaching that I decided no longer was I going to sacrifice character in our program for results. Just being talented wasn't going to be good enough. Now, this young man named Akil was our most talented player going into that season, but he struggled with a lot of different behaviors that were below the line, that were unacceptable for us. And so I chose a different approach than I probably would have in the past, which in the past, I would have been much more on that transactional type of disciplines, which is offering rewards or yelling and getting angry, getting upset, in practice, running him. Instead, that season, when he would drop below the standard, we would offer maybe a little support. I probably was not very good at it at that time, but I would just remind him of the standard and say, if you do not get back up to an acceptable level, then you will be sitting out. And we would do that. If he was not working hard, he might make excuses around his knees hurt, he's tired. That's fine. Then just step out of the drill. And initially, that was fine for that young man, right? And I think a lot of coaches, when they hear these progressive consequences, they're like, oh, that kids would love to step out of the drill. Well, we would sit Akil out of the drill, and then the next thing would come in practice that he would want to be a part of. We would be scrimmaging because he was a gamer and he loved to play. And I would say, well, sorry, you know, you set out the last drill, you're not getting the opportunity to participate in this game. And sometimes that was enough to send a clear message to him to get him to raise his level the rest of practice. But for the first 2 months that season, we actually really, really struggled. And I was unsure of what I was doing. Was it going to be effective? And around the Christmas break, we had sat him actually on two different occasions out of a game because he had failed to self-correct in the previous practice. So once again, we talk about progressive consequence. You sit out a drill, you might sit out an undefined amount of practice time, then you might sit out the entire practice. And if that was the day before a game, you weren't playing the next day. And so Akil is at this stage has set out two games. We've been probably a few times a week have been having to enforce these, sit out this drill, sit out this. And it's just this constant battle. And so around Christmas time that season, things came to a head. Like I had to draw a line in the sand. And I remember we took our team down in Florida to this beach workout, and we were really going to put them through it, you know, really put them through some tough conditioning. And I said to Akil before that session, I said, you have a choice. You could choose to be a part of this team, but if you choose to not finish today's workout, that's it. You're going to go home from this trip and you'll no longer be a part of what we're doing here. You will lose the privilege to be a part of our program. Now, me and the other coaches, we actually didn't think that he would get through the workout. We were pretty sure this was going to be the moment that he threw in the towel and he quit. But the amazing thing was his teammates wouldn't let him quit. He mattered to them, and he was a pretty darn good basketball player as well. And that was a turning point in the season. That was a turning point for Akil because he went from being our most talented player, at many times our laziest player when it came to trainings and practices, to the next 2 months of that season as we went through there, he became the undisputed leader. In fact, at the end of the season, unanimously every coach gave him the coach's award for leadership. And unanimously at the end of the season, he was voted by his peers for being the most improved. And it wasn't about his ability on the court. It was about his attitude and effort. And here it was just the power of consequences, the power of doing it in a way where it was his choice. We knew and we let him know that we knew he was capable of meeting the standard. And but if when he chose to not meet that standard, that there would be a consequence. And so I think that's just one really great story of just how consequences are often necessary pain to help drive change in behavior. But also the way that we enforce consequences And like, I like your phrasing there of not doing it in a nuclear way where it's just one big one at the end. We had drawn many, many lines in the sand. And eventually it did come to the big line in the sand. And he chose to get on board. And I think that if we continue to do that in a transformational way, we'll be more successful in a lot of those instances.
Well, JP, I think that's such a great example and illustration of kind of what we're talking about with progressive consequences, and that you sort of slow played your interventions before you got to that, you know, it's now or never moment on the beach. And I think sometimes as coaches, you know, for lots of different reasons, we kind of put up with things. Like a player shows up, especially if they're one of your better players, and maybe they're not working as hard, or yeah, maybe they need a little rest, or they got sore knees, or there's all these different excuses where they're not meeting our cultural standards. And we kind of let it slide, and we let it slide, and we let it slide. And then someday we just wake up on the wrong side of the bed and we think, not today. Today it stops, you know, and we just confront it head on. And I don't think that's the best way necessarily to be able to change that behavior. So when we talk about progressive consequences, one of the things I would challenge coaches to consider are, what are the privileges in your program? And I'm not talking about privileges like sometimes we hear, you know, dramatic examples at the collegiate level of, you know, a team doesn't practice well. I remember a story in one of Coach K's books where he was so disappointed in the way his team was competing that he locked him out of the locker room, right? And they're not allowed to use the showers and keep their stuff in there. You know, and the speech is, this locker room is a privilege. Your gear is a privilege, right? It's something that's given to you that, you know, is not, you're not entitled to, you earn it. And I think there's something to that, but I think there's a lot more privileges that maybe we have to manipulate a little bit, rather than some of those more dramatic, you know, stands that we might take with our team. But I think as coaches on a day-to-day basis, we would have more tools at our disposal if we considered more things privileges. For example, think about this. If a privilege is earned, as a player progresses through your program, maybe they start as a JV starter, and they work their way up to being in the varsity rotation, and then they become a varsity starter. Each of those steps in and of itself, privilege, right? It's a privilege to be in the starting lineup at the varsity level. And so a progressive consequence might be to take that privilege away. Maybe they don't practice with the first team. Maybe they get relegated in a sense to having to do some reps with some JV players if they're not meeting your cultural standards. In a sense, because they've earned more privileges, there may be more leverage for you to use some of those things to correct behavior before it gets, again, to that nuclear stage.
That's a great point. You know, Just last week, I asked my players through kind of a Google form, we were kind of clarifying certain ways of supporting our standards throughout the season. So the players had to answer a question, a couple questions. One of those was, when you're below the line for us, when you're behaving unacceptably, your effort's not there, you know, how can your teammates support you? How should you acknowledge and accept that type of support? But one of the other questions I asked was, when you fail to make that adjustment, when you fail to correct, what should the consequence be? And almost unanimously, the players suggested a loss of playing time, which is great if they're playing. But if they're the disgruntled player on the edge of the bench that comes in and is not working hard, then that's not really a privilege I can take because they haven't even earned the playing time. So I have to educate my players and engage in a bit of a conversation this weekend around, well, then what in that case? And that's where we talk about practice is a privilege. It's an opportunity to get better. You need to practice to, you know, obviously work your way into the lineup, or you need to practice because that's why we're here. You know, we're here to play. We're here to compete every day. So that's one way to introduce that to your players, is just to ask, like, okay, beyond playing time, what are some other consequences? And getting them to explore that can help you to determine some other privileges that can be lost. In the story of Akil, every time we set him out, you've lost the opportunity to get better. You've lost the privilege to play on Friday because you chose to do that. But we also outlined those consequences, which I think is important. We didn't just throw those out there one day randomly and he's like, whoa, what's this? You know, before coach just ran me. It was like, we were really clear that when you fail to meet the standard, you fail to correct, that was what the consequence was going to be. And so that's another thing I'd recommend to coaches is explore those privileges and those consequences, but then also kind of try to come to some agreement with your players on those as well.
Well, JP, I think there's one other variable here that is worth reiterating. And I know we've talked about this in podcast after podcast in the last 6 months here, but you have to have the conversation with your team to find and to agree upon the standards and the behaviors that are expected every day in practice or in the locker room, et cetera. Because if you don't, you run the risk of players adopting a victim mindset. They're the victim of a coach that says, well, I'm not his favorite, so I'm not going to play, or my parents complain, so I'm not going to play, or he's got his favorites and that's why. And we want to get rid of that. We don't want that to undermine our credibility. And the way that we do that is by ensuring that the standards have been agreed upon by the coaches and the players in advance. And then all we're doing is bringing them back to the standard that they said they wanted to aspire to. Now, that kind of leads us into another one of the challenges in sort of walking this fine line as we're trying to distribute consequences that really matter and can be meaningful. And that is the tension that many of us feel, myself included, between wanting to be the supporter, as we talked about last week, but also sort of the responsibility to be the enforcer of those standards. It's a difficult fine line to walk. On the one hand, wanting to come around players, and on the other hand, having to be the one that calls them up to those agreed upon standards.
Well, Nate, that's such a great point. You know, there's just such this challenge of being the supporter and being the enforcer when it comes to these standards. And it's a hard, you know, type of thing to switch from as a coach. And it kind of makes me think a little bit about a situation I've had with my own team in the last, you know, couple weeks where 15 practices end the season. And yeah, the shininess of a new season, especially following a pandemic and you're being out for 6 months, I mean, that starts to wane. And so our standards and our of effort and focus, they started to drop a little bit last week. And honestly, I wasn't happy with the players, but I wasn't happy with how I was handling it. I was kind of going towards a little bit of a more negative tone and just really just being negative, not being supportive, but not really holding them accountable. I was just kind of complaining. So I decided I needed to be more intentional and start to enforce the standards this week. And before I did that, I needed to ask myself, first off, have I invested enough in the relationship bank account to start doing that? Like, you have to form a relationship. You have to build that connection before you can really start to hold people accountable. And I felt good about that. I've been doing that, trying to do that on a consistent daily basis through my one-on-ones with them. Now, coming into just even yesterday's practice, I wanted to be I didn't just want to come in there and start enforcing the standards. I wanted my players to be prepared for it, so they knew what was kind of coming. And so they also understood where it was coming from. And so I still, you know, started most, like most practices, I tried to connect with as many players as I could, and just ask about them and continuing to invest in those relationships, because that really is so important. But even this, before we started the practice, I huddled everybody together and I let them know that I was going to be stepping it up as a coach. I was going to start to enforce those standards today because honestly, our effort and our focus wasn't where it needed to be last week. And so it was my job to start to hold them accountable to that, to the things that they said that they needed to do. And that was a really important piece of that conversation, was just letting them know that I was going to be tougher than I probably had in the past. Now, in the past, I don't think I would have necessarily even prepared my players for that. And I'm sure there's loads of players that went, gosh, he was in a bad mood today, you know. But here I was able to like let them know that this was intentional and that this was for their benefit. And so when I think we're trying to move from supporter to enforcer, sometimes just giving them a little bit of a warning and also reminding them of why you are doing this, why you are holding them accountable, because it's what they said was really important for them to do to be successful.
JP, you used that phrase, the relationship bank account. That comes from Stephen Covey's original work in the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And when he talks about making those deposits, because we know that withdrawals are going to happen. Those deposits are often in nickels and dimes. You know, it's great that you're connecting with your players on the day that you're going to show up and hold them more accountable or be more assertive as a coach. But I think it's important to understand that that happens over the course of time. And just like building up any savings account, 5 or 10 cents at a time, it takes a lot of deposits, right, in order for the balance to build. On the other side of that, your withdrawals are often in dollar bills. You know, when you come in and you get on a player, you hold a player accountable, you sit a player out, players oftentimes can interpret that as, you know, coach doesn't like me or coach doesn't believe in me anymore, you know, as this major withdrawal in the relationship piece between the coach and the player. And I think by using that accusation audit, by saying, hey, guys, today's going to be a little bit different because I'm going to hold you to this standard from the beginning of practice, you're helping them to reframe that interaction so that ultimately we would hope that they would see your assertiveness as a deposit for them. You know, that you're communicating, I care so much about who you want to be, I'm not going to allow it to slide from the beginning of practice like we did the other day. But it takes a little bit of intentionality in that communication for them to be able to see it that way. Now, there's another element to these discipline situations that's important to give some attention to here. And that is when a player does something that ruptures the tapestry of your team, they do something that violates the trust and the bond with their teammates. You know, maybe they curse out a teammate. Maybe they run out in anger from a practice. You know, maybe they quit the team after a game. Like, there can be a lot of situations where it isn't just they haven't met a standard. It's that they have done something that has damaged the relationships in the program. And that's where coming up with a consequence that's restorative can be a useful tool to bring them back into the fold as part of that accountability process.
Yeah, and I mean, I could pull out a handful of stories here, Nate, where coaches have called and they're frustrated because once again, a player blew up in practice or they walked out or they quit the team for the third, fourth time. And coaches are kind of at their wit's end. And yeah, a lot of times in those situations, you need to be clear about some progressive consequences. Hey, if this happens again, or if it happens, this is what the consequence is going to be. But like you said, there's been a damage in the relationship. Trust has been lost. So you have to be creative in those moments. You have to be creative in ways that, like Joe Maddon in the wine, find ways to reconnect people. One of my favorite stories is of a high school coach who had a player quit in the middle of the season around February. Well, that player was a sophomore or junior, and they came back that May and they said, hey, I'd like to come back out for the team. Now, that's a difficult situation because honestly, yeah, you might give that person another chance, but their teammates don't trust them and the coach doesn't trust them anymore. So we tried to get creative with it and we drew up this scenario. They were headed off to team camp in a few weeks, and this player became the designated drinks guy. So when they're in the cafeteria, everyone grabs their food at team camp. This guy is the only guy that gets the drinks. And so people are, you know, hey, I need a chocolate milk. Hey, I need a Coke. Like, and he's having to run around for like 3 days to serve everybody their drinks. He's having to serve his team, but it's kind of honestly, it became this kind of a funny thing, right? They were going to give him a hard time. It's a little bit of hazing. And honestly, I think probably like 36 hours into it, the coach was like, all right, you've done enough. You're off the hook, right? You've shown your team that you're willing to do what it takes to kind of repair that relationship. And so I think creative ways of disciplining like that, that are helping other people to regain trust, I think those are really important.
I can think of two examples in my own coaching career. A number of years ago, we had a situation at a team camp in the summer where a player just had a really bad attitude, I think related to where she was at in the rotation and playing time and what have you. And so, you know, other players were coming to me. Everybody could see it. And so before we went to the second day of this camp, we just called this girl in and me and another coach met with her and just, you know, what's going on? And she kind of laid out some things that were frustrating her. And I said, well, listen, right now, the most important thing that you need to communicate to your teammates is that you care more about them than you do about your own time or your own role or whatever it might be. So right now, you're losing the privilege to play in today's games until you can demonstrate that you're a great teammate. And that meant carrying the balls. It meant making sure the water bottles were filled. It meant being the pogo off the bench, the first one that's up, high-fiving and demonstrating that enthusiasm for her teammates. And when we felt like she was restored as a teammate, then we would restore her opportunity to play again. And so it took a game and a half, and she did all those things. And finally, we felt like, all right, She's in a place where, you know, she's being a little bit less selfish, a little bit more of a selfless teammate. And we allowed her back into the rotation and played the rest of camp and never really had any issues after that, even going into the season. But to your point, we had to give her an opportunity to repair those bonds with her teammates before we were going to entrust her again with the ability to be able to play.
And sometimes I think some of these consequences that we come up with when we're not as creative are we're just giving them something to do, you know? But like trying to be creative, you know, we had Shane Souden, who's has been in the mentorship program for a few years now, and he recently in his college basketball team had a player that has repeatedly missed team meetings and team gatherings. And he was kind of like at his wit's end, and it was just really frustrating for him in that relationship. And so for this young man, he decided he was going to sit out a week of practice, but it wasn't just going to be a suspension from practice. He didn't just lose the opportunity to practice this week. This player was going to sit out in the gym in front of his teammates and read a book. Now, he does not like reading books. So Shane gave him chop wood, carry water. And every day after practice, he had to text him and the teammates kind of like a summary of what he read. And here's a kid that doesn't like reading, who instantly, after he finishes reading Chop Wood Carry Water, takes the initiative to go buy another one of these books from Joshua Medcalf, I think Pound the Stone, just because he started to connect with the message that he was getting and it resonated with him. So here you have a consequence that's not only for the benefit of the relationship, the trust, but it was just a consequence that was going to help him to be a better person and engage in an activity like reading that was for his benefit.
I'll give you one other example, JP. We had a teammate that made some disparaging remarks about another teammate online. And those screenshots of those comments got back to me as the head coach. And so we were kind of forced to deal with that, you know, because, again, we had a violation of our standards, right? That's not the kind of teammate that we wanted to be, not the kind of experience we wanted to create for each other. And also, you know, it was something that clearly ruptured the relationship with her teammates. And so we did two things with that. One, that the player ended up sitting out a couple of games, but one of the issues that her parents even brought up when we had a conference about her behavior was that she didn't seem to appreciate or value her teammates or see the value in her teammates. And so what we had her do is I gave her 14 thank you cards, 14 envelopes, and the home address of every one of her teammates. And I told her before she would be eligible to play again and be restored to her former role in the rotation, she had to write a thank you card, essentially a note of appreciation for every one of her teammates and identify specific things that she saw that they brought value to the team, put those in the mail. And when that was done, then that would be part of her restoration after she served her penalty. And obviously the cool thing about that is not only was it personal, but it was delivered by the mail, which never happens anymore. You know, it's a surprise to her teammates. They didn't know it was going to happen. And it, again, was a way that practically forced her to find value in every one of her teammates before she was going to be allowed to have the privilege to play again.
Now, as coaches, we don't always have to be the ones that come up with the creative consequences here. I think sometimes some of our best things have come from a coach sitting down with the individual and asking a few questions. One of my favorite questions is, what would you do if you were the head coach? Like, how would you feel if you were me here? What would you do in this situation? And it's amazing what sometimes athletes will come up with. Sometimes they'll have some really extreme consequences, and then you as the coach come in and go, well, we don't need, you know, to be kicked off the team, you know, and you can come up with something that's a lot less severe than maybe what they suggested. The other question I always like is, you know, how are we supposed to bring you back to the team, right? People are not going to trust you necessarily right off the bat that you're going to stick it out this year when things don't go your way. So how can we bring you back to the team and reestablish trust? Putting them in their teammates' shoes can just be a really, really powerful type of activity. And you never know, they may come up with some actually creative consequences for themselves here that they'll obviously agree to because they were the one that came up with it.
Well, JP, as we wrap up this week, we know in our experience and working with so many coaches that despite our best efforts to use progressive consequences to be creative and offering, you know, restorative solutions to try to help players to renew their bonds and bring them back into the fold of the team, that there are some players, there are some situations where that repair is not possible. The damage that they have done or the damage that they continue to do to your culture, perhaps to undermining your coaching, it becomes too great to be able to keep that player in your program. And so next week, we're going to talk a little bit about that question. How do you know when it's time to cut a player loose?
Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you'd like to get more practical tools to build your culture, you need to subscribe to our weekly newsletter. When you do so, you will get the Calling Up Culture and Leadership Guide PDF. You will also get the 5 ways any leader can improve their culture PDF and the Culture Transformation Kit PDF. So you can subscribe by just going to thriveonchallenge.com. There's a place there at the bottom to subscribe, as well as there's a link in the details of this episode for you to subscribe to the newsletter.